Ecclesiastes is a part of the group of books in the Bible known as wisdom literature, focusing on the practical, everyday challenges we face in life. The book of Job focuses on suffering, the Song of Solomon on sexuality, the Psalms on the practicality of worship, and both the Proverbs and Ecclesiastes focus on a variety of practical life issues. Moving from the sinfulness of the individual to dealing with groups of sinned individuals, Solomon seems to focus on allegiances that we choose, not simply those that happen to us. Sometimes we willfully choose to align ourselves with an organization, employer, or leader. Does that sound familiar this morning? Kind of what Gary talked about, wasn't it? But despite our best efforts, we're not in control. For Solomon, this is a point of great frustration. Even though he has control over an entire kingdom, he recognizes that ultimately God is the one that's in control. There is simply no way around the ultimate control of God. There is no such thing as premature death or a chance occurrence. All things are within the hands of God. Jeffrey Myers puts it this way: Solomon gives us an encouragement to receive God's good gifts without trying to figure everything out. Any questions or comments? If you're just coming in, there's handouts in the back.
But he also talks to us not just about God's good gifts. He talks about the worthlessness of man's efforts on their own.
Correct. Yeah. So, I will back up a little bit. So, I hate to do this, but I'm not going to read the text in class. As we go through the questions, we'll cover just about every verse. So, I'll just bear with me. I apologize for that. But we have a lot to cover, so... And I timed it out as almost 5 minutes in reading when I'm reading it. So, does everybody understand what we're doing? All right. So, it's an open book test. So, when I ask a question, you can look at the book. So, first question: what tools does wisdom offer us? That's in verse 1. So, look at verse 1 real quick and tell me, what tools does wisdom offer us? You have to speak up.
Well, it says a person's wisdom brightens their face and changes its heart appearance.
Okay. Wisdom lights up a person's face, and wisdom softens a hard face. But there's one thing at the very beginning of that verse that talks about.
Explanation of things?
Yeah, the ability to analyze and interpret. And depending on your translation, it may say it a little bit different. What tool does wisdom offer us? First thing is the ability to analyze and interpret. And then it lights up a person's face and it softens a hard face. See that?
I see a question. Who knows the explanation of things? That's a question. Is the answer wisdom?
Yes. To that question in verse 1, yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. Now remember, in a previous class, we talked about knowledge and wisdom and the difference of knowledge and wisdom. Y'all remember what the difference is? What is knowledge?
Knowing
things or knowing information. And what is wisdom?
Applying
or knowing how to use that knowledge. So Solomon's talking about wisdom here. How to apply the wisdom. So why should one be in submission to the king or the government in our case? Verses 2 through 4. Why should one be in submission to the king or submission to government? Well, that's why I said i.e. government. If you live in another country, you'd have a king. But I think the same demand or applies. How about?
There's another saying, it's like you can't fight City Hall. I think that's the message of from your text here. Right? It says that the king's word is supreme.
Okay.
Against them, so that's kind of what I think of.
Okay.
We don't actually, as born Americans, swear an oath, but naturalized citizens do swear an oath.
Right.
The allegiance of the United States of America. Law enforcement officers, military, all swear an oath.
Yeah.
And so I think that from that perspective, he talks about, your oath of loyalty to the king.
To the king, In other countries, you do an oath to the king. This is what I got. For God's sake, if you submit your life to God, part of that is obeying the king because of the power which the king has at his disposal. But the commentary says, there's no government anywhere that God has not placed in power. So those who refuse to obey the law of the land are refusing to obey God, and punishment will follow. Y'all ever heard of that before? You ever heard of that command before? Someone said, Any comments? So we're supposed to obey the government, right?
Well, read the last part of verse 3.
Of verse 3? Do not join in an evil matter. Is that what you're referring?
Yeah, do not stand up for a bad cause.
Okay. How do you determine what's a good cause and a bad cause, Deborah?
Gary answered that this morning. Does it go against God's word?
Yeah, that's what Gary was talking about.
Yeah.
That's exactly how you measure it. But sometimes opinions get in the way, don't they? So we have to be careful.
Sometimes.
Huh?
Sometimes.
Perhaps.
Hey, Lynn, even in the military, we have to obey orders.
Right.
But there's an interesting word right before orders. That's lawful.
Oh, okay.
Because we can be tried and convicted, even if we were told to do something that would that's wrong against Geneva Convention,
right.
Laws of armed conflict, whatever.
Yeah.
If we know it's wrong and we do it because we were told to, we can't just pass the buck to our commander or whoever told us to do it. We're still liable for that. So we have to obey lawful orders.
Yeah.
They also provide religious exemptions for many things that maybe you're opposed to.
Yeah, everyone back during the draft days, you could apply for an exemption. Some of us were in that time frame. Any other comments? So what does it mean to not be in a hurry to leave the king, but then do not join in an evil matter? And that's exactly what we were just talking about. Even though the king's word is supreme, who can say to him, what are you doing? So whoever obeys his command will come to no harm, and the wise heart will know the proper time and procedure. Is there a bigger reason to keep the king's laws? Is there a bigger reason? Verse 4, which we would have gone with question number 2. What does verse 4 say? I just read part of it. Huh, ma'am?
Kings had power of life and death.
Yeah.
And so, if you're saying, no, I don't think so, then they could say, off with your head.
Yeah. In a country with a king, he is the superior authority. And he has the word. And that's what verse 4 is saying. Who can go up to him and say, what are you doing? I mean, he has the authority, final authority. So generally speaking, what will one experience who heeds the king's command? Verse 5. Generally speaking. Generally is the key word. What will one experience who heeds the king's commands? Yeah, nothing harmful. He'll avoid punishment. So everything will be good. Experiences no trouble. as one translation says. So are doing things God's way, the King's way, and the right way easy to do? No.
I would say that doing even what God says will always give you no trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's not always true.
In what way, David?
No. God's way goes against what the King is saying. You might get killed.
Yeah. In the long run, he is. But there may be consequences.
Think about Jeroboam as the king of the divided kingdom in Israel. And he set up two different calves to worship instead of going back to Jerusalem.
Yeah.
So that was his command, but that was not lawful
in the
eyes of God.
No, that was So. Yeah, to answer David's question, I think if the king says to do one thing, and this is what Deborah's saying, but we do what God says to do, there still may be physical consequences. Like I think Wayne said, he could chop your head off.
I didn't say that.
Oh, somebody did.
In the case of three Hebrew boys, he said, there you make a decree, to do whatever they did, what God said.
Yeah. You talk about the fiery furnace guys? Yeah. Right. Yeah. That was a situation. David in the lion's den. David was the same way with the lion's den. Daniel. I said David. Daniel. Y'all knew who I was talking about.
I heard of stories in the early Christian days where they made Christians march out into an icy lake and just stand in on the ice.
Oh, really?
And that was their punishment for their belief.
Yeah.
So I doing what God says doesn't always result in no harm.
Well, the ultimate is, though, our reward is going to be in heaven, eternity in heaven. That's the reward. But we still have to do or go through some suffering from time to time here on earth. So, and sometimes it's worse than others. What will a wise man perceive even though misery may increase greatly? How will a wise man look at this? Verse 5 through 7. But verse 6 is really the answer. Yeah, it's a proper time and procedure for every matter. And where have we heard that before?
In Ecclesiastes
3. Anybody want to sing the song? You know the song? That's it. Is there always a way to do something right? Is there always a way to do something right?
Unless you're doing something wrong to start with.
Yes, the answer is yes. What did Albert Einstein say? Anybody know about this? If you don't have time to do it right, when will you have time to do it over? John Wooden, the basketball coach, said basically the same thing, but he added a word. If you don't have time to do it right, when will you have the time to do it over, is what John Wooden said. But the original was Albert Einstein's, when will you have time to do it over? That's hard to do for me. I have a hard time. I want to do it and get it over with, and then I realize I did it wrong. So, anybody else have that problem?
Yes.
You have a question, and you just saying, yeah, okay. So over what does no one have power? Verse 8. What? Time of death, breath of life, day of your death. Again, depending on your translation. Number 10, what is said of those who are given to wickedness? Verse 8.
It will not release those who practice it.
Exactly. Wickedness will not deliver them. At the end of the verse says, evil will not deliver those who practice it. And I think it's New Living says it's possessors. So, any comments? I know we're moving fast, but do people have the power to hurt each other? Absolutely. Are we talking just physically? Absolutely not. What had the preacher observed about the rule of men in verse 9? Of course, when I refer to the preacher, we're talking about who?
Solomon,
exactly. The supposedly the writer of the book. So what had the preacher or what had Solomon observed about the rule of men? Verse 9. Okay. Anybody else have a thought? I count 63, David. That's the preacher's count. There's a time when a man rules over another to his own hurt. Verse 9 says, all this I have seen and applied my mind to every deed that has been done under the sun wherein a man has exercised authority over another man to his hurt. So what is odd about wicked people? Look at verse 10. I'll give you a second. What is odd about wicked people? Okay, that's one.
Even though people thought they were good, they were actually wicked.
Okay. Anything else?
They die.
Well, yeah, they die.
Apparently, they used to go to the holy place.
They used to love to go to church.
Yeah.
It's one of them. Yeah, they used to like that or love that. They're forgotten. And even where? You remember when we talked about this before?
Even by their
hometown, they're forgotten. So, yeah, they're buried. They die and they're buried. They used to love to go to church and they're soon forgotten. That's kind of strong language, isn't it? Now again, depending on your translation, it may say it a little bit differently, but the thought is the same. So what did he observe about the wicked who had come and gone from the place of holiness? We just talked about it. The wicked were buried. They were soon forgotten. They go in and out of the holy place. And this too is what? Futility. Or vapor or meaningless. Depends on, again, your translation. So why were the hearts of some men set to do evil? Why were the hearts of some men set to do evil?
Because the sentence was not quickly carried out.
Okay.
A lack of judgment.
A lack of judging or judgment?
Yeah.
Judging.
Yeah, I feel it could be wrong.
Okay.
It's kind of
exactly. The answer to this question, and we're going to break this down a little bit more in the next couple of questions, but Rob hit this one right on the head because the sentence against evil was not executed speedily. Now that's one thing our laws tell us here in America, isn't it? We're privileged to a speedy trial, whatever that means. Sometimes speedy trials are 3 years in length, but that's what we're told. So should crime be punishment? Let's answer that one first. Should crime be punished? Verse 11.
Otherwise it multiplies crime.
Exactly, and that's the why to the question. Criminals otherwise feel free to run amok and evil increases. That's like punishing your children, isn't it? If you don't punish them in some sort of way, then they just continue in their bad activities. I know y'all never had to go through that. My dad, he didn't like to use a belt, but he used a belt.
How do you know he didn't like it?
Well, he told me he didn't. You know, it hurt him worse than it hurt me. I said, yeah, right. Yeah. No, he didn't miss. And he was the type, if I got paddled at school, guess what I got when I got home? Yeah.
I wouldn't have told him.
Well, he had connections. My dad had connections. You know.
Before you got home.
This was Atmore, Alabama, with a population back then of maybe 3,000 people. He was a hospital administrator, probably the largest employer at the time in town. So everybody knew my dad. And he had connections at the school, believe me. But anyway, I digress. All right, number 16, we just covered that. 17, what message is sent to the criminal when a sentence is not speedily executed?
Crime is accepted.
No big deal. Keep doing what you're doing. And we see that today.
Also, there's that get even kind of thing, too.
Well, there is that.
You don't feel like someone was punished, then you feel like, I'll be punished.
Yeah. Yeah. You see that a lot in the cowboy movies and all. Well, we're gonna go out and hang this guy. Even if a sinner does evil 100 times and still lives for a long time, what will happen to those who represent, for those who respect God? We talked about this a couple weeks ago about evil sinning people sometimes living long lives where the good folks die young.
So it will go better for those who fear God.
Exactly. The end result will be better. It is well with those who respect God, who honor His presence with them. So again, we may suffer physically and mentally sometimes here on earth, but the reward in heaven is what we're looking for. What is the fate of the lifelong criminal who seems to escape punishment? Where's he going to end up? Okay, we'll have to be careful with that, the judging. I'm not saying you're not right, but okay. Yeah, okay, there we go. Our last class, which was 2 weeks ago, chapter 7, verse 15, we read, a man who obeys God's laws dies when he is still young. A wicked person lives for a long time. And we talked about that. And the end result is someone who follows God will actually live forever. Was that a safe saying?
Well, so will the person who does not follow God, but he will live outside of the presence of God.
Correct. Yeah.
So that can be said in books.
Yeah. Sometimes life is not fair on earth, is it? So what did the preacher describe as a vanity which occurs on earth? Verse 14.
The not fair part.
Yeah. Good people are treated as though they were wicked. Wicked people are treated as though they were good. Anybody ever seen that happen? We've probably all experienced it to some degree. So why does the teacher recommend happiness in verse 15? Why does the teacher recommend happiness in verse 15? Absolutely. Because a man has no better thing under the sun than to eat and drink and be glad or be happy. Depends on, again, your translation. So what do I do in light of this? What is this telling us to do? What's the lesson for us? Have more donuts. Eat more donuts.
Yeah, don't be on a diet. Just eat everything you want.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I got.
But that happiness is short lived when you can't. You don't have clothes and you can't walk up a lot of stairs and things like that.
Yeah. It'll come back to bite you later, won't it? I got ostracized, so I had 3 M&Ms back there. They said, that's not for you, that's for VBS kids. Only 3 M&Ms.
I got busted
ass. You got ostracized too? Yeah. Have fun, enjoy life, and work hard. Experience this happiness as much as you can. So 23, we may sit on this one a while. What does the phrase eat, drink, and be merry mean, and is it a good approach to life? What does it mean, first of all? I mean, we were joking about the donuts and M&Ms, but what does it actually mean?
Well, it could be a healthy life, and then you'll die of heart disease or diabetes.
You're so uplifting and positive this morning, Margaret.
I think the underlying meaning is not to live an unhealthy life, but to just choose happiness.
Okay.
Choose joy. And, you know, we see people that go through some of the worst things that we could possibly imagine and still choose joy in their life. So we know that it's a choice.
Yeah.
It's not something that's thrust upon us. It's a choice.
Yeah.
Just like choosing to follow Christ.
Yeah. How many times have you gone to visit someone who's in, you know, eaten up with cancer, maybe the last stages of life, and when you walk in, they're asking you how you doing and how's your family doing, and, you know, on down the line. Jim?
I'm just thinking about Paul, who was here last year.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me how optimistic he is and how up he is going through all the things he goes through on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Imagine
yeah.
What he goes through.
Yeah.
It's got to be the Lord working in him.
Well, just his life in general. Yeah. I mean, from day
that's
one.
The case of a person saying, you think, why me?
Yeah.
He's probably saying, why not me?
Exactly. Yeah. Jared?
Now, see, that phrase we take out of context. I think it's enjoying life.
Okay.
As opposed to some people get carried away with a drink.
Right.
And divert out of that.
Yeah, I think what he's speaking to is, you know, be joyful and be content with what God has given you. I think if that's your approach, that's the way you
yeah.
should live this life.
Yeah, and enjoy life in the godly way.
Yeah.
Enjoy life, you know, even when you're persecuted and being beaten down on. Again, like we've been talking about, the end result is what we're looking for.
So. And also, when he says eat and drink, I think he's talking about eating food and drinking, you know, a drink that's probably something God would see as something good for it.
Right.
Not everything that we eat and drink today is actually food in God's eyes. We are eating, we eat a lot of stuff that's just food in man's eyes, and it's not even food in God's eyes.
That's debatable, but we'll talk about that some other time.
A part of this phrase is that it can be with gratitude to God.
Okay.
Joy for what he's given you, or it can be with self-recognition as the rich man did in Luke. You know, eat, drink, and be merry, for you have much laid up, you know, for all your years ahead of you.
Right.
So, I mean, he's talking about gratitude to God here for your life and the toil that you do, not the fact that I did it.
Right. The end result. So.
To enjoy life,
what?
In order to enjoy life, you have to do what?
Stop what?
Stop lying.
Stop lying?
In order to enjoy life, you can't lie, right?
Well, you shouldn't lie, no. But that's not all of it. Yeah. Yeah. That's part of it. If you don't lie, you'll enjoy part of it.
Well, yes. Mind, I think what he's trying to say is obeying the word. If you disobey God's word, you eat, drink, sleep in God's word and the scriptures, all the rest is just going to fall in place.
Okay.
So
So you're saying eating and drinking here is spiritual?
It could be spiritual. It could be, you know, physical. But just live life, enjoy life, and just thank God every day for what
he
gives waking
us.
Up.
Yeah, what he gives us. Yeah.
Yeah, just enjoy it. Yeah. Smile when you're hurting. You know, if you're going to cry, but then continue to smile because you know the end result.
We have our valleys and hills. Yeah.
You continue in his word and believe in him. That's all the rest don't matter.
Okay. So what y'all think? Is this talking about spiritual food and spiritual drink? Or physical food and physical drink? Huh?
I thought it's exactly the same way, you know, eating bread and blood.
Yeah.
You know, being
okay. What else? Who else thinks it's spiritual and not physical?
Why do you have to be? It doesn't have to be one or the other.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. That's another question. I believe it's all of the above. That's me. In no way, and this is a commentary I found. In no way does this verse promote gluttony, drunkenness, or the party life. Rather, Solomon is advocating the same principle Paul lays down in 1 Timothy 6:8 when he says, "If we have food and clothing, we will be content with that." What do you think? And finally, when will we ever know all there is to know about life, knowledge, and wisdom? 16 and 17. Will we ever know all there is to know about life, knowledge, and wisdom? No? Why not?
Because only God knows, and his wisdom is so much higher than ours.
Okay. No one can know all the work of God, even if one is wise. So a man cannot understand the work that is done under the sun, which is the key phrase in the book of Ecclesiastes.
And if we could actually know everything, there would never be a reason for an argument.
This is true. Yeah, I know some people who think they know everything, but yeah. Yeah, we'll never know everything. Yeah, yeah. And I'm not sure when we get to heaven, and this is debatable, I'm not going to try to get into a theology debate here, but there is some thought that even when we get to heaven, we won't know everything then. But we'll be able to sit at the feet of God and Jesus, and we'll have that interaction with them.
So. I don't need to know much. I just want to eat.
There you go. Margaret?
Did Solomon believe that he knew everything?
He thought he did. Yeah, he thought he did.
And
he was considered the wisest man on earth. Remember in the first chapter we talked about, even Queen Sheba went and visited him one time, you know, to pick his brain. So, yeah, he was considered the wisest man. And here he's saying he don't know everything. So, any other thoughts or comments?
More than most.
Probably, yeah. Yeah. At the time. Yeah. Anybody else have a thought or comment before I read the concluding remarks? Yes, ma'am.
I learned from helping Jen with her garage sales that my perspective is limited. Because my perspective was to, I knew about tools, and she priced her ladders very low.
Oh.
But what I learned was her perspective was, she just wanted somebody to have it and
get rid of it.
And the person buying it wanted the best deal they could.
Yeah.
So I really see how my perspective is limited. So I'm trying to understand other person's perspective.
Yes. Yeah. Good point. There's two reasons to have a yard sale. Either to make money or get rid of junk. So, sound like you were trying to get rid of junk.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody likes to throw away something.
Sir?
They were treasures.
Yeah, one man's junk is another man's treasures, right? That's the way American pickers look at it. So.
My latest saying is less is best.
Yeah, exactly. Don't get us started on minimalist.
minimalist. So among the vanities in life is living in circumstances over which we have little control. For example, the kind of government ruling the country in which we live. The preacher observed that evil men are often in positions of power and offers his counsel for enduring such vanity. Submitting to governing authorities is important, especially in view of the power wielded by those in authority. But there will be times when the wicked rule, bringing misery. Be patient, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. While judgment against such evil may be delayed, it will come in its own time, and the wicked will soon be forgotten after their demise. Another vanity is how the righteous sometimes suffer while the wicked prosper. The preacher reiterates his conclusion that it is best to seek to enjoy what good God gives in one's labor under the sun. So, no matter how hard he tries, even the wisest man is unable to recognize all that God is doing. To summarize chapter 8 in 140 characters or less, obey the king's command. Though sinners do evil, it will be well with those who fear God. No one can know what goes on under the sun. And that is from Chris Juby. Any comments, questions, parting words of great thoughts? All right, your homework for next week, read chapter 9. Because depending on time, we may or may not be able to actually read the text before we actually get into the questions. So by at least reading the text, you'll know sort of what we're going for when we get there. Any final thoughts? We are 3 minutes late. I apologize. We started 8 minutes late, so I'm really ahead of time. All righty, everyone have a blessed week. Be safe in your travels and stay cool.